5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
A prison built to be escape-proof, surrounded by bone-chilling waters, armed guards, and the sheer isolation. But in 1962, three inmates vanished from Alcatraz, leaving behind nothing but a raft made of raincoats, fake heads in their beds, and a question that still haunts the bay. Did they drown in the dark, or did they pull off the most legendary prison break in history? Welcome back to Macabre Mondays, where mystery meets macabre with your favorite married duo. I'm Ale.
And I'm Tom.
Your guides through the strange, the sinister, and the spooky, where I tell the stories and he gets dragged along for the ride. Today, this story is taking us to San Francisco Bay. Now, whoop, whoop. Can you guess anything around that area?
I'm hoping and praying that it is one of my favorite topics, which is Alcatraz.
It actually is. Yeah, that's where we're going.
Yep. F yes.
Yeah, we're talking about the 1962 Alcatraz prison break. Okay, I don't know why I'm on this flow today of like giving a melody to things, so bear with me here. Ooh. Possibly the greatest escape of all time, or maybe the most mysterious disappearance the prisons have ever seen.
I don't know. D.B. Cooper is pretty up there.
He's another one that I'm fascinated by.
That one. Both of these are insane.
Yeah. Well, look at you excited. Usually you're like, oh no, okay. I'm joking.
Well, this one's exciting because of a movie you've never seen.
I have yet to see Shutter Island.
I was meaning Shawshank Redemption.
Oh, yeah.
Total different movie.
Wait, is Shutter Island a movie?
I don't know.
Wow, no, now I'm kind of shocked. That's funny. Okay, Shawshank Redemption. Oopsie.
Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, yes. I still have to watch that. And I mentioned to watch it the other day, like two nights ago, and you were like, no. So you can't say anything.
You're right.
You can't say anything. Wow. Before it became America's most feared prison, Alcatraz was known as, do you know?
I don't.
Yeah, you're going to learn a lot of little background facts.
I get excited because I feel like even as we get further into this podcast, we're going to cover cases, obviously, that I probably know or at least know of.
Or stories, yeah.
But with your research that you do.
I do my best.
I feel like you always uncover things that I've never heard of or
didn't know.
Well, I
feel like it's always like little things in the background that like you have like those one-off questions. And so I'm like, let me just immediately. Yeah. I'm like, what was Alcatraz even before it became a thing, right? Okay, so no guesses? You don't have any guesses?
Oh, no. I have no idea what it could be called.
Okay. It was actually a lighthouse. Well, technically, it was a barren rock with a lighthouse on it, but...
Oh, I thought you meant what the prison was originally called or referred to as.
Well, no.
I mean, I still didn't know that.
Right. Well, it's a tiny island in the San Francisco Bay, and it was originally called La Isla de los Alcatraces, okay? Or Island of the Pelicans. Pelicans are gannets or something.
It was interesting.
It's what they called them by the Spanish explorers that found that came across it. Now, Alcatraz is actually taken from the Spanish word Spanish. From the Spanish word Alcatraz, meaning gannet. And so I looked that up because I'm like, what the hell is that? And it's like a type of seabird.
Okay.
So it's like a type of pelican.
Do they squawk and stuff? Like,
probably. They look pretty intense. Like, they look pretty legit.
Okay.
I remember when I looked them up to see what they were all about. They look like the birds that you see at the end of The Notebook that are like flying through the sky. It's like super romantic. They're super skinny and stealthy.
I thought you were going to mention the birds movie, and I was like, no, God, no.
Those are like the crows. Yeah, let's not scare your mom because she's listening.
Here they come.
Yeah, well, by the mid-1800s, it was being used as a military fortress. The U.S. Army fortified it during the Gold Rush to guard the bay. And so by 1861, it was converted into a military prison. So fast forward to 1934, the Department of Justice transforms it into a federal penitentiary, which is a place to, well, they wanted to make this a place meant to hold the worst of the worst, which when I was reading about it, I was like, oh, it sounds like, what is it, like Batman's prison? Arkansas? I forgot the name of it.
Arkham or something.
Is it? Yeah, it was like Gotham's prison or something. Yeah.
I don't know.
Whatever. Like one of those. So that's exactly what I thought about. So imagine that, except, you know, probably. I mean, no, it's probably the same. Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. So, I mean, essentially think of it as the prison's system end of the line, right? So like if you couldn't be handled anywhere else in any other type of prison, they would send you here. It's like,
my parents probably wish they could have sent me here growing up so many times.
Oh, God. I'm sure mine did too. Okay. So they would most of the time have, you know, mobsters, bank robbers, murderers. So, you know, like kind of the worst of the worst. But they also incarcerated broken men who had tried to escape before, men who were maybe considered just too dangerous or too high profile or too stubborn to be trusted anywhere else. So you're pretty much locked up on this like cold rock in the middle of the foggy bay, you know. And it's crazy because obviously I've not been on the West Coast whatsoever, but it would be very interesting to go see it in person because I've been looking at the photos and it looks intense.
Yeah. I mean, I've been to LA, but I've never been to San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And all the photos that I agree with you, all the photos you see, it looks terrifying.
Yeah, it looks exactly what you would kind of see in like a scary movie, right? Shutter Island. I mean,
Shawshank Redemption.
Do 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 do. Well, okay, so imagine it. You have a cell there. It's 5 feet wide. You pretty much just eat, sleep, and live within arm's reach of the toilet. Typical prison things. Now, one of the things that I was reading was that the prisoners weren't allowed to talk here. Like, it was strict silence. Yeah. You couldn't even talk during meals or in the corridors for, like, decades. That was, like, a rule.
I never knew this.
I guess, like, no fun, right? Yeah. So, like, you can't talk, can't do nothing.
I mean, that makes
sense. Right. And so, solitary confinement was common, and some inmates described it as a psychological torture, which I'm, like, valid, obviously. If I'm like confined like that, yeah, that'd be insane.
You don't get to have any communication at
nothing.
All?
Nothing. You don't even get to go out or anything. The only thing that kept the prisoners from the prison and San Francisco was pretty much just the water, you know, the bay. That's it. Yeah. And so it was like a natural moat that turned escape into a death sentence pretty much because anybody who would try to cross it would be...
Probably drowned.
Yeah. So... And because of that reputation, that made it home to the worst of the worst. The most notable ones that I saw are, do you know which ones they are?
Wasn't Al Capone here at one point?
Al Capone was there. I thought so. Yes. And then George Kelly Barnes, which was Machine Gun Kelly.
Machine Gun... Wow,
machine
now
gun
I can't even
jelly?
Say
I know, I don't know what's
Wait,
up
so
with
you mean
anything.
He was Machine Gun Kelly before Machine Gun Kelly thought
yes.
that he came up with a cool name?
With oh my God, MGK.
Machine Gun Kelly. Say it five times.
No, seriously, that's exactly what it was. And then I was looking it up. I'm like, no way. What's the connection here, right? Well, what is it? George Kelly Barnes. He chose that name because that was his favorite gun to use or whatnot. So that's what was his nickname.
Wow, so original.
I know, right? I mean, but I feel that. I get it, right? And so that's the second one. And the third one was Robert Stroud. And he was nicknamed the Birdman, which apparently he was convicted for murder. But he also, I think, I didn't look crazy into it because I was more on why was he called the Birdman or whatnot. And so it seemed like he also was a pretty smart guy and had like a degree and all that stuff. Like he didn't really seem like he was a crazy hard cold criminal. So, but the reason why they called him the Birdman was because he actually self-taught himself in ornithologist.
The ornithologist.
So it's people who study birds.
Okay.
That's why they call him the Birdman. So I'm like, okay, cool.
Hold on. Did he learn this while he was at Alcatraz? Because then that makes sense.
I'm not entirely sure 100%, but I would assume so because...
Well, what else? You can't talk to anyone.
There's nothing else you can do, exactly.
Oh, darn. Okay. Guess I'll learn birds.
It was funny, too, because when I was looking up... Because I'm like, Al Capone, okay, I know him. I don't know MGK, right? This guy. And so I looked it up. And he also... One of the things that I just have to make... I have to bring up... Have you ever heard of the birthday effect?
No.
Okay, so immediately when I looked him up, it showed me like when he was born and when he died. And he died on, well, he was born on July 18th and he died on July 18th, right?
Really?
Yeah, and so I'm like, oh, every time if I find out somebody has passed or whatever, I like to look at their
death
date, right? Yeah. Because I remember a long time ago, I don't know if anybody else has heard about this, and I thought it was kind of weird. It's like a statistical phenomenon that suggests that people are more likely to die on or near their birthdays. And I don't know why, but a lot of the time that's like mostly true.
Okay. That's really interesting.
Yeah. And I always found it kind of like creepy because it reminds me of like movies like Death Day, you know, because it kind of gives you like, you know, your birthday. And that's why they say like your birthday's coming up, you know. Well, not when they don't say that, I say it. But
you do. You also have.
I'm like, we can't blow out the candles until the day comes because I don't know if that day's coming. We don't know yet.
Well, I was going to say, yes, you are very big on don't wish me a happy birthday until it is my birthday.
Yeah, until it's my birthday, right? Because we're not there yet.
I haven't made it there.
Even if I'm, right. And so that also kind of plays. But anyways, that was just something that I noticed. And I'm like, man, I wonder if anybody knows because it's kind of like a weird, strange, odd. Yeah. I mean, fact. So, well, in June of 1962, that reputation clearly came to an end, as we all know it's right. Now, let's talk about the escape team. Let's assemble our men. Okay?
Escape team.
We've got four men with one plan. Check, check. Right. Now, first guy we've got here is Frank Morris. Now, Frank was 35 at the time. Very sharp, with a reputation for being quiet, calculated, but very smart. Okay, this man was, like, intelligent.
Wasn't everybody known for being quiet here?
Where now? I get it. Because of the silent time? Yes, no, seriously, yeah. No joke. But when I mean that he was smart, I mean he was scary smart. His IQ was reportedly 133.
Oh,
I know. Okay. I know.
I won't lie. You're already hitting me with stuff that I didn't know.
Yeah, I thought that was so interesting. And I think that's even you're above, not above average. You're like the next level of the IQ where you're kind of, you're gifted. Which also, another fun fact, Snoop Dogg has like an IQ of, I think, 140 or something apparently. So.
Oh yeah. There's a bunch of rappers there.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Stupid smart.
No, seriously.
Kevin Gates has a master's in psychology.
So smart. Okay, so he was incredibly smart, right? He'd been abandoned as a child, bounced around from foster system, and spent most of his life in and out of prisons. Frank had already pulled off an escape from another high security prison in Louisiana State Pen in 1959. And he was actually known for being like an escape artist. A lot of people called him like the Houdini of escaping prisons.
Damn.
Right?
Dude, so, they could have given, like, the government could have paid him big bucks.
Could have.
Just tested, like, hey, You're best at escaping here. We'll hire you.
Yes.
We'll end your sentence. And
yeah,
part of your sentence is still going to be kind of going to jail, but we want you to
do
everything you can.
Scratch our back, we'll scratch yours. Yeah. It reminds me of Catch Me If You Can with Leonardo DiCaprio. Ooh,
that's a good
really good movie. That and Shawshank Redemption.
Oh. Arnold Palmer.
Oh, no. Okay. So he was actually caught a year later for burglary in 1960, and that's when he was sentenced to 14 years at Alcatraz. And remember, like I said, this is kind of like the end all be all. They're like, if we can't...
can't put you anywhere else. Here you go.
Can't stay here, but you gotta go home. You can't go home, right? Oh, no, I think it's the other way around. You ain't gotta go home, but you can't stay here.
No, you can't stay here.
Yes, is you ain't got to go home, but you can't stay here.
Yeah, something
yeah that's
like that.
What
yeah,
he
yeah.
says. Okay, apologies. Now, inside Alcatraz, Frank met Alan West, who was also 35 years old. Now, West had been there since 1953, and he was already working on something pretty big, okay? He noticed in his room that the ventilation shaft in the back of his cell had crumbling concrete around it. And so Alan had started chipping away at that little by little using spoons.
Okay.
And eventually he ended up letting Frank know like what he was up to. And he kind of had this idea of like,
yo, that's so risky.
I know it is risky. I mean, it reminds me of the show Prison Break.
Yeah.
Because the minute you tell, you know, they're all, everybody's desperate in there.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I do personally feel like I'd rather at least have somebody else that maybe might want to escape with me. That way I'm not just, my anxiety levels would come down just a hair.
No, and clearly he picked the right guy, right? We're talking IQ and also like he was the escape artist of escape artists, apparently. The
guy's like, use a spork instead.
He's like, dude, I had a butter knife. What are you doing? Like, you need to work smarter, not harder. But anyways, Frank clearly saw the opportunity. Now, Frank couldn't do it alone, so he reached out to two other inmates, the Anglin brothers. And it said that apparently he had met them in other prisons, so they've kind of, like, crossed each other's paths.
Okay. I think I knew that.
Okay. Well, John Anglin, 32, and his younger brother, Clarence Anglin, they were born into a huge family in Georgia and raised, like, in Florida. And they were actually two out of the 14 children, which... big, big family there.
Hey, good odds.
No, seriously, I mean, good odds.
12 of your kids didn't end up in jail.
Exactly. Now, they'd grown up working in the field, swimming in like freezing water, I was reading, figuring out how to make things work with pretty much nothing, and they were said to be pretty handy. So, as adults, they became bank robbers, breaking into banks when they were closed. And while in and out of prisons, they too had attempted to escape from them. They ended up in Alcatraz in 1958 for a bank holdup in Alabama. Now, one of the things that I read about them is that they never meant any type of harm anytime they would rob a bank.
Nobody back then did.
No, right. But in the sense of when he robbed the bank, at one point I was reading something that his family member had stated that one of the times he robbed a bank, like a lady fainted. And so they went to help her and get water. So they were very late, and they would try to rob the banks like after hours, so not to like hurt anybody. Right. Because that's, you know, you see a gun, you see a hold up.
It makes me think, I can't think of the movie. It's come around constantly on social media. The guy that goes into the bank and he's holding the lady up and she's like, I'll give you all the money. And he's like, I don't want no money. Give me a job. You know what I'm talking about? And then he ends up working the teller counter with the like pantyhose on his face still, and he's still holding the gun.
Yes. Okay. We're gonna have to find the name of that one, but yes, I know what you mean. Well, now the team is set, right? We've got
Can't get that image out of your head, can you?
No. Okay, so now we've got Frank Morris, right? We've got Alan West, and we've got the Anglin brothers, John and Clarence. Now, West pretty much had the axes. He'd been there longer than all of them. If you think about it, even, you know, he was...
That's what, almost 10 years?
No, it was 1957 when he...
Oh, I thought you said 53 for some reason.
No, 1957 when he got locked up at Alcatraz. And then the brothers were locked up in 1958, I think. Yeah, 1958.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So technically he was there a year earlier. But I mean, again, a year has to feel like a decade because there's nothing else to do. Now, Wes had the access. Morris clearly had the brains. And the Anglins were, if you think about it, literally and figuratively, kind of like the tools, very handy and stuff.
Yeah.
So together they would orchestrate one of the most biggest prison breaks in American history, right? Now, here's what makes this escape even more jaw-dropping. This took serious time and serious planning. Now, we're talking over 6 months of preparation, they said that they took. Okay, now, possibly even longer. I mean, it could have been, who knows? But yeah.
I mean, it could have literally started a week after all of them kind of got in there.
Exactly. Yeah. And they were doing it, all these type of preparations, right under the guards' noses. Now, let's start with the tools, right? Because your main thought, we're going to break out of prison. How the hell are we breaking, right? Exactly. Now, their weapons of choice were spoons and a homemade drill made out of a broken vacuum cleaner motor.
I think I remember this one, yeah. Like, and I thought that was genius.
That's insane to even think of that is insane. Yep. Like, I just thought that was, I mean, they were like, we leaving, doesn't matter what we're doing.
No, for real.
Yeah. They literally stole a vacuum motor from the prison and turned it into a drill, using it to loosen the ventilation grates at the back of their cells. Okay, clever. Now, each night while the prison slept, they'd chip away at the concrete walls behind their grates. Okay. Now, the thing that I saw is that the guards did like hourly checkups. So imagine that having to, you know, they have to be pretty precise with the timing of what
they
got to
have at least one person probably on guard that like, you know, they alternate or something.
Right.
Do a little whistle.
Each night while the prison was sleeping and they chip away at the concrete, they'd cover the holes with cardboard and paint to blend in. And so any of the noise that they made was actually covered up with music. Now, here is one of the things that I found out. There was actually something the inmates called happy hour. And so, and it wasn't margaritas in the rec
Imagine.
Yard. Okay, no, it definitely wasn't. But it was like a little stretch of time, usually around the early evening, when that strict silence rule was kind of like relaxed and the guards didn't really care. So because much of its history, Alcatraz enforced near total silence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Inmates weren't allowed to, I mean, they couldn't even talk during like the corridors. They couldn't talk outside, nothing. Like no one could really communicate essentially, right? But by the late 1950s, that rule, they kind of were like, hey, maybe we could just like ease up a little. I mean, who cares, right? They're in this, they're never leaving. It's not a big deal. So in that case, Frank and the others were able to kind of keep planning in that hour where it's noisy.
Oh.
Yeah. And so they did have music because some of the inmates also had some type of
like
instruments.
Radios or something?
No, not radios. They would have like instruments that they could use, like a guitar or something or things like that. Yeah. And so, and I'm sure they would probably be singing and clapping, or honestly, maybe they're not even doing music. They're just all chatting it up. You know, who knows? Now, in fact, Frank was the one who used music as a cover, because when he and the others were scraping through the concrete or using their homemade drill, they'd have someone play music to drown out the sound. So once they got into the corridor behind their cells, and before we move forward, I also read something that they, all four of them, kind of asked to be put in some cells next to each other, but obviously, like, I'm sure at different times, right? Now, like, can we hang out with our friends?
Keep them from being conspicuous.
Yeah, conspicuous. And they all asked to be put on cell block B because it was right behind a corridor.
Damn.
So, yeah, exactly, right? Because there was a corridor right behind those cells.
Mm-hmm.
And so they actually used it as a secret workshop where they stashed their tools. They were stitching together, you know, their raincoats that we'll find out about. They were building pretty much the whole plan of what they were going to do, right?
It was like a little office.
Yeah, I mean, they were building the paddles. They were, you know, they were going to, like, they're going all out. So they even had a periscope that they made to keep watch for any guards or any movements coming, which I thought that was incredible because, I mean, that's just clever. I would, if I was in prison, I'd be like, yo, this is it. This is it, man. I can make someone laugh a little. That's all I've got. Like, I read that the prison, on average, had between 222 to 260 inmates, right? They could hold more, but that was pretty much like their average. Now, in its full history of being a prison, it held a total of 1,576 prisoners during just the 30 years that it was a prison, right? Which is still still a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, they ironed out and melted the rubber of the raincoats with heat from steam pipes in the corridor to seal the seams. They even tested it in secret, filling it with air to make sure that it would float. So now, that's the crazy part, because to me, it's like, how did they even know how to do this stuff?
Well, I was going to say, how would you even know that
you
could get heat from this? It almost, it's either one of them was smart enough and thought ahead on all this.
Maybe life experiences too.
Well, that, or maybe construction or something. But then the other thought of that kind of goes into the, maybe they were just like, hey, let's just get into this corridor and then see what we could work with.
Could be.
There.
No, definitely could be. And I know for them to try to make a raft, they ended up getting 50 raincoats, which I thought that was crazy. And that's why when I saw on average, like, how many inmates they usually have, it was like between, you know, the 220 to 260 mark. I'm like, okay, well, maybe 50 doesn't seem ridiculous. That's a lot of raincoats to keep track of and monitor. And I'm sure they were like, all right, we lost one, let's just get another one. No big deal. So they ended up utilizing 15 raincoats just to make their life raft, which I thought was crazy, and also lifesavers. Okay, so they pretty much used the heat from the steam pipes in the corridor to seal the seams. Now, they were pretty attentive. They listened to guards talk, they observed the tides, and the most helpful part was when Frank read a magazine from the prison library called Popular Mechanics and picked up every detail that he could. Any incoming magazines were first reviewed by the prison administration, okay? Because they have to censor each of the issues just to make sure that there isn't anything that might pose a security risk or something, right? Especially content that would maybe give inmates idea about escaping, right? Now, it was an article about the homemade life vests. It had a complete step-by-step guide of photos slipped right through in there. So they, I guess nobody saw it and they just left it in. Right, like talk about what a one in a million situation. So it made it to the prison library untouched, where it was placed on a rolling cart that, you know, an inmate would push around, offering reading materials from cell to cell.
Get your books here. Get your books. Your books. Extra, extra.
Now, the Anglin brothers were mechanically inclined, and Frank Morris had the mind of clearly a strategist, because we're talking big game here, okay? Now, clearly everything was planned down to the T. They even made wooden paddles out of, like, leftover wood that they would find. They crafted dummy vents made out of the cardboard and the paper mache to hide the holes and the damage that they were making on the vault, on the wall, like I explained. They also used anything that they had in their cell to, like, cover up that side to make it look less suspicious. Yeah. So if they had, like, a suitcase in their cell, they kind of put it there. And also, you got to think about it, where the guards are walking, it's probably like 9 feet to the wall on the other side. So you don't really probably notice that stuff. And the condition of the prison's already kind of crappy. Yeah. So you're not going to be like, what? It's probably not
all that bright either back of their cell.
Probably not. That's for sure. And so along with all those items that they ended up creating, right, they end up making the famous fake heads that they placed on their pillows.
This is insane.
Yeah, that were placed to fool the guards when they would do their walks long enough for them to be able to get a solid head start, right? Now, the heads, they actually crafted that using soap, cement dust, and, like, toilet paper.
Okay, did not know this.
Okay, well, they ended up painting them with fresh tone paint, and which I was like, how do they even find paint? But at this point, it looks like the guards are, I don't know. I'm sure the conditions of the prison weren't what we see now, for sure. This is the this is 1960.
No, honestly, I feel like these guards were the type of guards that kind of like, hey, chilling, Larry, so what'd you have for dinner?
They're like, 15 raincoats missing, not a problem. Yeah. Fresh painted coat, paint coat, whatever, not a problem.
Fresh painted.
It's not a problem. They're like, wood pieces missing? Not a problem. They're like, it's not a big deal. Like, nothing, right?
Hey, did you guys see those four guys? They all got in that corridor? Not an issue, though, right?
Well, just wait, because so they made the dummy heads out of that, right? And then they added real human hair from the prison barbershop for a more realistic appearance.
Which I did think that was insane.
Yeah, I thought that was like clever.
How innovative and thoughtful are you?
It made me think. I'm like, man, with this time and energy you guys are spending, imagine if you guys chose not to be criminals. You know what I mean?
Especially Frank. He was the one with the high IQ, right?
Yeah, Frank.
Frank could have been out here being some like professor or some shit.
But the problem is that Frank's childhood failed him because, again, he was abandoned at 13. Yeah. You know, he was jumped around from foster homes. Like, all he knew was to do that. So, well, I mean, it makes sense.
This was in the 50s.
Well, he was 35 by the time.
I know, but who's to say he couldn't have met Einstein earlier on?
Dude, who's to say? I know, but that's what I mean.
He could have been part of Oppenheimer.
He could. Whoa. All right, maybe, yeah. But
he was smart.
Yeah, but that's what I mean in the sense of, imagine if they had just applied themselves some another way, right? If things had worked out differently, but I thought it was funny.
No, for real.
So after all that planning, the night finally came. It was June 11th of 1962, and the prison lights were dim. The guards were doing their usual rounds, and everything seemed normal, right?
Mm-hmm.
But behind the walls of cell block B, four inmates started to bring their plan to life. Now, three inmates were slipping out of their cells, and no one noticed. Instead of bodies in their beds, there were decoys, the paper mache heads, like I said. And from the guard's angle, it looked like everyone was just sleeping. Nothing out of the ordinary. But Frank Morris and the Anglin brothers were already crawling through the holes that they'd carved behind their cell vents. Now, Alan West, because I know I said there was four, but only three were seen leaving.
That's what I was going to say. I'm excited to hear this because
Did you, like, is it foggy memory?
Well, I only ever remember the story talking about three. So the minute you mentioned Alan West, saying, I was like, who is this guy?
Yeah, who's the fourth guy? Well, yeah. Originally there was four guys. Yeah. And so Alan West actually didn't make it because his vent opening was still kind of partially sealed when the time came. And so when he tried to chip it loose in a panic, by the time he ended up getting it open, the others were already gone. And obviously they were like, they left him behind.
We can't wait for you, man.
We can't. And I'm sure that's something that they probably came to terms with as well while they were working together. Yeah.
I mean, they probably came to his vent and were like, dude, I'm sorry. Like, we can't wait.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So pretty much he was left behind. And now we've got Frank and the Anglin brothers. So we've got the three. Now, they climbed into that hidden utility corridor that they've been accessing for months that we've been talking about. And from there, they scaled a 30-foot plumbing shaft. They broke through a vent on the roof and somehow got down to the ground level without being seen.
That's...
I know.
I mean, climbing up alone... I mean, I'm assuming the shaft because I'm trying to...
Well, you have to think about... Look at the photos. I gave you photos there.
Oh, yeah.
But you have to remember, too, it's... like a steam pipe, and pretty much they're climbing that, and then...
Oh, yeah, I see.
Yeah. But also keep in mind, the adrenaline that must be pumping through this right now. I would freaking climb up...
I'd be doing everything.
The Great Wall of China just to get there. Yeah, no, seriously. So they ended up getting to the ground level without being seen. Now, before they started making their way out of the prison, according to the FBI reports and Alan West's story later, apparently they inflated the raft when they were inside the prison... before they reach the roof.
That's...
Yeah, and so to me, I'm like, wild. Okay, I would find that a little bit wild, but
especially looking at the hole that they had to go through.
Right, so I don't know if that's really what it is, or maybe it was the other way around. And I thought that was interesting, but then again, I'm wondering if maybe they inflated, not fully, but just... I'm going to get into it, but that's what I'm thinking, is that maybe they inflated it, like, a little bit. I don't know. I don't really know how that would have gone about, or their plan, right?
Yeah.
But here's the detail that, like, seriously blew my mind, because while they were building the raft, right? I mean, building the raft is one thing, but how the hell do you inflate it, right?
Well, so my thought is heat can make things, like, air expand, and...
No, baby, because they used 50 raincoats, remember? They sealed it to make a raft.
I know.
All right, so how would you inflate the raft? They built their own air pump out of an accordion.
Yo, you let me keep on talking about this show.
I was laughing. I thought it was funny. But then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to let him finish. So they ended up they took one of the old, worn down prison accordions and they turned it into a makeshift bellows.
Holy shit.
Yeah, they rigged it so that every time they pressed the accordion in and out, it pumped air into the raft like a DIY air compressor. Okay.
They'll knight one of the guards. Don't you guys find it odd that every 3 seconds we hear an accordion just randomly?
No joke, but honestly, I mean, it wasn't fast, but it was probably easy. It wasn't easy, probably, but at least it worked.
It was efficient.
At least it worked. So while the rest of the prison thought someone was probably just playing a little bit of music. In the background for happy hours.
This guy sucks. He keeps playing the same damn note.
These guys were using that very same instrument to blow up the only shot they had to escape this island. And clearly, still pretty genius of an idea thus far, to be honest, because I would have probably been like, all right, who's got the biggest lungs?
And a one. And a two.
One of the Anglin brothers in the back already passed out. We're like, and we lost one. Now, a lot of people imagine that the guys were running to the edge of the island with the raft rolled up under their arms. But that's the other thing, though. Another thing I read was that they must have inflated the raft once they got to the roof. And I'm like, okay, maybe that makes more sense. But whatever. Regardless, they inflated it. That's really all that matters.
There's a lot of documentaries out there that people actually go. They got permission to go and basically try to test everything out.
Oh, just you wait, because I'm gonna talk a little bit about that.
Okay,
later in the episode.
Okay, but we keep going.
So they forced open a vent on the roof, and one of them had actually loosened those bolts like weeks earlier without trying to be caught, and then they ended up shimming across the rooftop over the prison and carefully dodged 6 guard towers and searchlights.
Damn.
So that's insane. Just like in the movies, literally, no joke.
Yeah.
Now, they carried the raft that they made out of the raincoats into the San Francisco Bay. And so they brought only two paddles that they were able to carve out and vanished pretty much into the water. And no one really knows for sure what happens next. But what we do know is that by sunrise on June 12th of 1962, Alcatraz was waking up just like any other day. Guards making their rounds. One of the guards approached the approached Frank's cell and called him. You know, they kind of noticed they haven't gotten up yet. Like, what's going on with that? Now, when he ended up moving closer and he poked his head with his nightstick, his head rolled right off. So. Imagine.
I just think of like a pumpkin, like the movies when a kid uses a basketball or a pumpkin and then it just rolls and bounces.
No, seriously. No, so now imagine being that guard, though. I'd be like, yo, what the hell?
I'd be like, I just got my ass on shift. This was not on me.
Yeah, dude, it's the morning. Like, what's going on? Well, by the time anyone realized what had happened, the men had been gone for hours. Remember, they left the night before. Yeah. Now, the guards sounded the alarms, and within seconds, the entire prison was on lockdown. When they checked the Anglin brothers' cells, same thing. Empty beds, the fake heads, and, of course, the makeshift wall panel that they created. Now, only Alan West was still there.
Poor Alan. He's probably watching this like,
he's like, damn, man.
I should have lost weight.
That's not even what happened.
I don't know. I was just thinking, because who knows? Maybe if he was a little smaller, he could have shimmied through.
He would have to been skinny mini just to be doing that.
Oh, it was
those
like
vents
a
were
lot
tiny.
That he needed to get
off? No, it was just like the concrete didn't like fully conclave when he had to go through with it.
Well, so fun.
He needed a little bit more covens.
I think it's kind of like a cat. They do say that technically, as a human, if you can get your head through something, then you're technically a weird,
no,
like
thanks.
The rest of your body.
I'd never want to try that. I'm going
to
just
you're
going to
escape prison and be able to live life.
I don't know. Leave me out of it. First off, I'm not
your
going to prison.
Your anxiety gets too bad. You just get stuck in the cinder block area.
Forget it. Just call me the bird woman. I don't care. Now, he hadn't made it out in time. His vent gotten stuck, like I said. And by the time that he managed to pry it open, they were already long gone. Now, he played it cool at first. But once the investigation started, he clearly cracked. The warden ordered a full-scale manhunt for the three. The FBI, you know, the U.S. Marshals, Coast Guard, everybody, all the prison guards, they were all on deck ready. Yeah. Helicopters flew over the bay. Search boats sliced through the choppy waters. The shoreline and nearby Angel Island were combed for any trace that they could come and find. And over the next few hours, a few pieces of evidence did turn up. Now, I said a few hours, but I saw like within 2 days. So I'm going to just say within 2 days, okay? They found a makeshift paddle floating in the water near Angel Island, a sealed waterproof packet, which was like a book bag containing photographs and names belonging to one of the Anglin brothers. So think of like a rum sack.
Yeah.
Right? Is that what it's called?
Like a rucksack.
A rucksack. But the small ones, the ones that you see in the cartoons when they're like, I'm leaving home, and they have it like on a stick.
Oh yeah, the ones on the stick.
Yes, so pretty much that, but it was like a waterproof packet. They found a little bit of raincoat material, and they found a torn life vest that washed up near the Golden Gate Bridge. So they found a bunch of particles around, okay? But they hadn't seen any footprints and no confirmed landings, and also most importantly, no bodies, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's get into theories, because there's only really two, okay?
Yeah.
Did they die in the bay, or did they pull off the impossible? Clearly, right? So, the water that night was apparently around, like, 50 degrees Fahrenheit, and the currents were pretty strong. Fast enough to carry someone very far off course, or maybe even sweep them out to sea. Now, authorities believe that the raft likely fell apart in the water, and the three men succumbed to hypothermia or drowned. And we're just like exhausted, and that's it.
At least they hope.
Exactly. Now, according to Alan West, the plan was to paddle their makeshift raft instead of traveling 1 mile south to San Francisco. They decided to head to Angel Island, which was about 2 miles north of Alcatraz. Okay. Their thought clearly, if we were to land on the mainland of San Francisco, people are going to be
probably going to find us
immediately. So they wanted to hit Angel Island and then from there hit the mainland in another route, and I'll tell you in Marin County, which I'll tell you a little bit more about. Now, at the time, Angel Island was a missile base that was decommissioned. So there really, sometimes there could be people, sometimes there probably is nobody.
Yeah.
But there are reports of other boats being docked there. So that also kind of leads into a theory, maybe they found a boat, right? From there, they intended to rest and then re-enter the bay on the opposite side of the island and swim through the Raccoon Strait to reach Marin County mainland. So it's just a different other side, okay? Now, once there, they plan to steal new clothes from a retail store, steal a car, and go their separate ways. Now, this route was strategic because Angel Island was less monitored than San Francisco shoreline and provided cover for the next leg of their journey. However, no such thefts were reported, apparently, and no confirmed sightings of the men were made of them ever being there. So clearly that kind of, you know, we got no proof.
Yeah.
Maybe they drowned. Maybe they didn't make it. Within 2 days of them missing, the investigators were finding clues, right? Like I said, a torn life vest was found washed up near the Golden State Bridge, the Golden Gate Bridge, and it was believed to be one of theirs. Now, one of the oars they made was discovered drifting in the water near Angel Island, like I said earlier, so it would align to what Alan West is saying was the actual real plan.
Yeah.
Now, I remember BuzzFeed Unsolved actually covered this at one time, and I remember they were talking about how apparently there was a cargo ship who said that they spotted a dead body in the water at one point, but didn't report it until months later because, I don't know, they didn't see the connection there. So that's one thing. That's the only place I saw that. That one
little artifact or whatever.
Yes, that one little clue. So they found that waterproof bag that was sealed, right, recovered in the water. Now, inside of that bag were personal belongings of Clarence Anglin. The bag contained photos of his family, it contained personal notes and important contact information, right? Something that clearly meant something
to him. You
would
need, yeah.
Yeah. To this day, it's kind of unclear, but it's the only recovered item that directly and definitively ties back to one of the escapes, but clearly still no bodies ever found. Years later, it makes me think too, like, I'm like, could they have done it strategically, like left that there for you to think that that's the way they were going and they went somewhere else?
Well,
I don't know. They were so clever.
I'm also thinking you're in a boat. And
yeah, probably
you're probably not holding on. Exactly.
Yeah, probably.
And if it was really rocky, then
not only hear me giving them the benefit of the doubt, or I'm like, they could have left it and they went another route and nobody knows.
Don't get me wrong. You have Frank with them.
Yeah, that's
true.
And
Frank is this freaking genius.
That's what I mean.
So,
yeah,
you
and
know,
they
I honestly kind of like your theory. I like your theory
well,
a little
bit. It's kind of fun.
Because who knows? Maybe there was actually more paddles they'd even built too.
True. No, it's,
and they intentionally took extras.
Yeah, we really did. No, now we're getting into the real conspiracy. No, but I know exactly what you mean. I know exactly. Because, I mean, like, they're pulling off the impossible right now. So
yeah.
what isn't impossible
and
at
that's
this point?
The thing. We have one person.
Yeah.
One person that knows almost everything that was happening. But he never obviously got into the room that all of them were in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that to me also tells me that who's to say that he didn't actually know everything that was happening.
No, or I wonder if it, because it reminds me of the show Prison Break, right? And in the show, they kind of were throwing each other off sometimes.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what? Because again, they were still criminals and they were still worried about themselves. But I know what you mean, because that's why then I start thinking that route, because Frank clearly reminds me of the main guy in Prison Break.
Yes.
The brother that's trying to
get
in.
Stupid, freaking smart.
Exactly. So years later, the team from MythBusters decided to put the Alcatraz escape to the test, right? Is this what you were talking about?
Yes. This is one of the videos.
Yeah.
And I remember I loved this because this was back
when they explained it really well.
I love MythBusters.
Yeah. So they put it to the test and they actually used a massive model of the San Francisco Bay. Now, this thing was originally built in the 1950s by the Army Corps of Engineers to test environmental impacts of coastal developments. So it covers, no joke, like 2 acres, but it's so precise that it can replicate an entire day's tidal movement in under 15 minutes, okay? So it's like a miniature town, like a Christmas town in San Francisco.
Honest to God, the MythBusters show alone, they always had access to the coolest tech.
They really
did. To be
able
to test everything.
They really did. Okay, now using that model, they kind of just laid a small little baby like raft, I mean, miniature to kind of see where the raft would go with the tidal wave. And then from there, they wanted to enact a real life simulation. Like they wanted to go out into the San Francisco Bay and actually and test it out. Right. So based off of that, they noticed that the tide was taking them kind of like straight to, I think it was the Golden Gate Bridge. I forgot, but it was taking them a certain direction.
Right, but yeah, we could be wrong on that.
Yeah, I'll put this all my sources are always going to be in the show notes, and I'll make sure to link the Mythbusters video because I think it was only like 5 to 6 minutes, and it was so cool just to see it in real life, because when you can actually visualize it, then it's so much easier for you to understand. So they end up building a replica of the raft made out of the raincoats, just like the one that they described in the FBI files. And it was the same size, the same style, even had like an oddly triangle shape, kind of like a skinny Dorito chip. The experiment showed that the raft could absolutely hold the weight of 3 grown men, even while battling the choppy waters at the bay. They used the same kind of makeshift paddles and launched from the same area near Alcatraz, right? But here's the catch. The tide pattern showed that instead of drifting toward Angel Island, like the escapees intended, the current would have pulled them east of the Golden Gate Bridge. But still, the Mythbusters made it. They still made it there.
That's the thing.
The raft still held together. Yeah. So it clearly shows that, I mean, again, we just still don't have the bodies. We don't know. But it does give you doubt that it is possible. Mm-hmm. It is doable. Right. And imagine the adrenaline that they were feeling that night. The adrenaline alone.
God, I want to say something so bad, but I have a feeling you might have already done the research or seen this.
I don't know. Maybe. Let's wait till we get there, because maybe if I get to it, if I don't.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you add that adrenaline that those guys must have been running on, right? And their background as hardened inmates who'd been plotting, prepping, and building for months on end. So, yeah, pretty possible. Not easy. You know, maybe not guaranteed, but
I have faith.
You have a chance, right? And so clearly it's possible. And honestly, like, everyone loves the story of an underdog, you know, regardless of them being criminals. Like, it still kind of gives you the, oh man, I kind of hope they did make it out alive.
Also, no offense to our generation of men these days, but I just feel like the men from the like 30s, 40s, and 50s, those were like the guys that worked on construction would slice their thumb off just keep finishing their job and then
they're
go to
like,
the hospital.
Get the honey.
So that's also where I'm like, even if they did fall in the water,
you're gonna sew this right back.
even if they did fall in the water, they're probably like, hypothermia.
No, I know
this
what you
water's
mean.
Warm.
I know what you mean. I see it that too back then, because it was kind of that tough as nails, like kind of. Yeah, I know what you mean.
I eat bolts for breakfast.
Like, they grew up on the farm. They grew up doing, it wasn't the life we have now.
Hell, my great-grandfather literally cut his thumb off and kept finishing his work and then took it to...
It's a different type of men that were raised back then, for sure, right? I looked it up, too, because I was wondering, I'm like, how big was the life raft that they created? And it was 6 foot wide and 14 feet long, which pretty
Holy
big.
Shit.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to hold up 3 guys. Yeah. So, yeah, but pretty good. Now, imagine that as, like, a skinny Dorito chip size. Now, the FBI stance in 1979, okay, now this was years later, when they officially closed the case, they believed and speculated, you know what? They must have just drowned. They didn't make it. We don't have any proof of them or any bodies, right? And so they ended up handing over the case to the U.S. Marshals, because in the event that maybe there might be some new leads along the way or whatever. Now, the case remains dormant until 2003.
Oh.
Is that what you're going to mention?
Yeah.
Okay, now enter theory 2. One of the U.S. Marshals, Michael Dyke, starts poking around the case, and he noticed that there was a stolen car report. A 1955 blue Chevy that was stolen the night that they were escaping. The witness that saw it said they noticed 3 men inside the vehicle, but at the same time, that report didn't really mean much because technically at that time, the escape wasn't made public yet. So no one saw that as a connection, which I thought was insane, right? Now, he ends up finding another police report from Stockton, California, which is almost 100 miles east of Marin County, which is where they were trying to get into mainland, from a man saying that He was forced off the road by a blue Chevy being driven by three men. So interesting, right? Because now if this is all true, then that means they really could have escaped.
100%.
And if those were reports from people actually calling the police, to me, it just, oh my God, it just feels, it gives you doubt. Like maybe they could have made it out alive.
Well, it does. And you also got to think of how, I don't want to say messy, but back at that time,
dude,
exactly what the marshal kind of came up with.
Right. He's like, let me poke around. Yeah.
You guys didn't think there was an escape at this time. So why would this police report have gone any
different
further
minds.
Than just a stolen car, whatever?
No. And like we said, this was in the 60s. This was way long ago.
On top of it, if I recall, and I could be completely wrong, but based off everything that I remember hearing from like my parents and all the older generation, also back in this time, drunk driving was still frowned upon.
But it wasn't taken nearly as serious. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true.
And so who's to say that the guy that got veered off the road was probably like, oh, stupid drunk driver.
Yeah.
Like, even if he did call.
But the fact that he called already just leaves it a paper trail. Yeah. Which I find that crazy. I know exactly what you mean. And it's funny that you mentioned about the drinking and driving and stuff. Because I remember I saw recently a news report, but it was like a throwback, like back in the day, when they were enforcing the drinking and driving, and if you people were pissed. Yeah, they're like, what do you mean? I like to enjoy a nice cold beer when I'm off of work and on my way home. And I'm like, damn, I didn't even know that was
the same thing as the seatbelts.
Yeah, same thing. That's true. So true. Now, let's start with the Anglin family, okay? We're still on theory two. They have insisted for decades that John and Clarence survived the escape. They say they received several unsigned postcards and Christmas cards over the years, none of them directly confirming anything, really, but they were all postmarked from different types of locations all around the world. The handwriting, though, they claim to look exactly like John and Clarence's. Now, one relative even recalls receiving a mysterious phone call, which it was his sister, not long after the escape. The voice on the other end simply said her name and then just hung up. And she swore up and down that it was Clarence. Now, in 1975, the family received a picture from a family friend of two men standing in front of a field in Brazil. Sunglasses, sun-aged faces. Could it have been the Anglin brothers? Well, in 2015, facial recognition experts said that the features were consistent, but they weren't strong enough to be able to confirm or rule them out either. And so I was also reading that I think for the facial recognition, they need like a good view of your pupils, like the corner of your eyes.
And you
got to
think of how long ago that photo was.
Right. It was very grainy and stuff. So you can only imagine. Now, here's where things kind of get even more compelling. Okay. In 2013, a letter was sent to the San Francisco Police Department, but it wasn't made public until 2018. Now, the man who wrote it claimed to be John Anglin. He wrote, "My name is John Anglin. I escaped from Alcatraz in June 1962 with my brother Clarence and Frank Morris. I'm 83 years old and in bad shape. I have cancer."
Yes, this is actually the letter that I was waiting for.
You were thinking about?
Yes, because I remember in 2013, because I was obsessed. Area 51 in this. These were the two biggest things.
You're like one of those
that
kids.
And the Bermuda Triangle. Those were like the three big things in my life.
Yeah. Well, those were the biggest mysteries back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember when this made news, I was in high school. And I remember when it made news, I was like, oh my God, I knew it. I knew they had to be alive.
I knew it. Yeah. Well, and it's crazy because the letter ends up saying that Frank Morris died in 2008 and that Clarence died in 2011. But he claimed to still barely be alive and offered to turn himself in exchange for medical treatment, right? Now, the FBI did obviously test the letter for DNA and fingerprints and handwriting, but the results were inconclusive.
Because
it just wasn't confirmed.
And if you think about it, back then, what kind of DNA did they have on these guys?
Oh, pretty much nothing, no.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, and it's funny
so
because...
So that's also why I'm like... Yeah, of course it's going to come back inconclusive because you guys don't have these guys in your database.
Well, and that's what's funny because the I forgot who it was, but one of the investigators around this time, like in the 21st century, like we're talking about the 2010s, whatever, they actually asked the Anglin's families for DNA samples from them so that they can have it on file in case like they end up coming across them and they could find them or whatever. But they denied. They were like, no, we don't want to be a part of that. So to me, I'm like, we'll never know. We'll never know. We'll never know if it was true, if it wasn't. But that really just kind of remains a major question in the case. Could they have actually escaped? I don't know. And here's the thing. None of it proves that they made it out, but also none of it proves that they didn't.
Yeah. I just personally, with all the things that happened and that letter that came out in 2013, to me, everything points towards the fact that they survived.
I want to believe it, yes.
The thing is, I don't even have like the underdog mentality. I just genuinely, I think through this and I'm like, these guys were so methodical about this.
I mean, they were planning it for six. That's all they do.
We've had multiple people test the theories of how they escaped, and they worked. They only had one life vest that showed up, broken or whatever, right, that they found, which to me also tells me, that's the other thing to me. If these guys didn't actually think through everything, they wouldn't have made life vest.
No,
and
they
said,
wouldn't have.
Hey, it's because that's the thing. To me, why would you make life vest if you're thinking, oh, this is just going to be a super easy paddle to the shore?
Right. It's because they knew if they had a swim, they had a backup plan. They're like, all right, where are we going?
So many people have tested it. It's been proven that it can work. And these guys, as you said, nothing else to do.
Yeah.
But think through this.
And also make it out alive. I just think the adrenaline will change someone, man.
Yes.
I could
and
have
then
adrenaline.
The coincidence also to me of a car was stolen that night by three men.
Mm-hmm.
And then those same three men were seen in that blue car.
Allegedly, yeah.
Allegedly.
Mm-hmm.
100 miles.
Reportedly, yeah.
In that general area that they were initially talking about trying to get to.
Yeah. No, I know. I know. I feel it. I feel it. I feel what you're saying. I really do. So maybe, just maybe, you know, they did make it to Angel Island. Maybe they made it to the mainland.
I think they did.
Do you know what's funny, too? That people swim from Alcatraz to the mainland all the time for sport. Every year, there's a triathlon literally called Escape from Alcatraz, where swimmers leap into the icy waters and make it to shore. No raft, no paddles, just, you know, their endurance and their adrenaline, pretty much.
All of them drowned.
Well, it's crazy because you can see the photos because I have them there for you.
Those.
Yeah, and to me, when I look at it, I'm like, man, if trained athletes can just or maybe just even thrill seekers, okay, can just make that swim today to go do it, you'd better believe, I believe that three desperate, determined men, criminals, right, running on no joke, survival instincts and months of planning, you can't tell me that they must have. You know what? I'm going to just make a declaration right now and say that I believe that they made it. That is my theory.
I also just feel, what good does a family get lying about their two brothers
children
surviving?
Yeah, them thinking
and
that.
And being like, yeah, we kept getting Christmas cards and everything from them. And
right.
What do they get? They don't get a benefit out of
that. Yeah,
if anything, in my opinion, if I found out that my brother or my sons escaped from a prison, I wouldn't want to make a lie and be like, yeah, they escaped. I'd rather just at least know what their fate was.
Well, that's my thing. I'm sure a lot of people do. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people believe that. But again, like, there's nothing concrete to prove otherwise. And also, you got to think, too, grieving families can also look at the light in places that,
that's
you
true.
Know, overlook it. But I totally get what you're saying because I agree, too. There's definitely both sides there. But that's what I mean. I'm like, I don't, especially seeing that they also do this triathlon and people make it.
No problem.
No problem. Yeah.
But that's also why, personally, if I was one of their brothers or a sibling, I wouldn't agree to a blood test or DNA test or anything either. Because who's to say, in my opinion, this is just my personal thing. These guys haven't obviously committed any harm since they escaped. They're old as shit. this point.
Right.
Even if you found out they had escaped or you found them, in my opinion, they already went through it. Don't put them back in prison.
Yeah,
and I know
like
that a lot of people might disagree with that.
Yeah.
But
it's
that's
been
also
50 years.
Exactly. And that's why I'm like, if I give you my DNA and then all of a sudden you find
you
a match.
You do find him? Yeah.
Now, who's to say that you don't, his last 5-10 years of his life, now all of a sudden you're throwing him back into prison?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Because to me, I'm like, all right, they did 50 years of, they've been alienated. They're doing their own thing. I know what you mean. Well, it's funny because they will still have them on the wanted list.
Yep.
Up until they're like 99 or 100 or something. And right now I think they would be 98, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah.
So they're still on the list for another year or two. And then they can come clean. But we'll see if they're even alive by then. Or even if that letter was true. Well, this story will forever be just another fascinating mystery to so many. I want to hear what everybody's thinking, though.
No, for real. Leave the comments down below.
Yes, we want to know.
We want to see.
Thank you for joining us today on Macabre Mondays. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. And hey, if you know more about today's episode or caught a detail that we might have missed, let us know.
And as always, you guys know the drill. If you have any type of story, no matter how minimal you think it might be, send it our way. We want to see all your stories. We want to be able to tell stories. And we want to share the stuff that you guys also want to hear. So send us in any of your stories to macabremondayspodcast@gmail.com or feel free to jump over to macabremondays.com and submit your story there. We'd love to hear from you.
Follow us on social media for searching Macabre Mondays for photos of today's episode, updates, and a little extra spooky fun with marriage mystery and a little mayhem. We'll see you next Monday for another sinister, strange, and spooky episode. Stay tuned. More mysteries just around the corner. But until then, stay curious and stay safe. Bye, everyone.
Deuces.